We've lost a few people over the course of the weeks. No, I don't mean just the fact that last week we had a very small crowd. I just, in general, we've lost a very small crowd.
It was Debbie and the rabbi. Oh. Great. But you recorded it, yeah?
We didn't. We could have had a chavruta, but we decided that it wasn't fair to everybody. So you didn't miss it. Yes, it was. Yes, it was. So you haven't missed it. But were there a few Walter used to come?
Well, Walter?
Didn't she used to come?
No,
besides.
No.
Not Walter. I'm getting the names confused. Wallet. Thank you. Thank you.
Suzanne's here.
Suzanne's coming. And she's.
Isha's praying for a change.
Okay. Yeah, the truth is that I did have that intent, and the best, you know, the road somewhere is paved with good intentions. So, yes, I had that intention, and I forgot, and so it'll have to be better for this week. But all right. We can do it at the show. That's right. Andy does carpool. So yeah, no. So we're sitting here at Akiva and at Epstein, and yeah, a lot more convenient. I don't disagree with that, but we need to put a push. Yeah, we need to see.
Well, I think when you miss 2 weeks,
terrible. I hate doing that. You lose the momentum and you lose just every week. So let's try to. Okay. Right, Sim is every other week, and Suzanne will come in eventually, and Shiffyland is still. I don't know if she's back or not, but. Evening late. So, okay. We'll get there. She actually came last week.
Yes.
But we had already adjourned. All right. I had a handout last class. We'll get to it again. Oh, I'll give it out now. Okay. So the last thing we actually did was a discussion of the role of Reuven, Gad, and half of Menashe. Right? The instruction that Yeshua gives to the 2.5 tribes that they are on their way into Israel, and they had made a promise to Moshe to remain at the forefront of the battle all the way until the end of the conquest of Canaan. We had a whole discussion about Reuven and Gad and half of Menashe, who they were, what their role was, what does it mean to go lifnei Hashem, or to be the chalutzim, the pioneers, or the front runners, the front lines, the marines of the Israelite army. One thing we did not discuss is the timetable. So I want to get a little stuck into the story of the Meraglim this morning and the spies, because I think that's really our next agenda, and I want to start. But I think it's important to understand the timetable of the sequence of events as well. So we're going to do both. We're going to start the story of the spies, and then we'll go back to the timetable. I just want to make sure we get a little bit into Perek Bet. We shouldn't stay on Perek Aleph too long. So we'll start with Perek Bet. Vayishlach Yehoshua Benun min Hashitim Shnaim Anashim Miraglim Cheresh Lemor. Yehoshua Benun sent from Shittim, which is where they're camped. Map. Okay. From Shittim, sent two miraglim. Miraglim are
spies.
That's a her, we'll come back to a number of times. Cheresh lemor. What's cheresh? Quietly. What does it mean quietly? He didn't speak to them quietly. Cheresh lemor doesn't mean quiet. Speaking quietly, it means secretly. Right. In other words, the word cheresh is modifying what verb in the sentence? No.
Vayishlach.
Correct. Vayishlach, the sending. He sent two spies secretly. Lemoy instructing them as follows. L'chu re'u et ha'aretz ve'et Yericho. Go and see the land, and Yericho in particular. Vayachu v'yavo et beit v'yavo beit isha zona u'shma rachav v'yishkivu sham. They went. Excuse me? Why would he know about Rachav?
Oh, I thought that he told them to go.
No. He says to them, go and spy out the land. Vayachu, they went. Vayavo beit isha zona. They come to a house of an isha zona. We'll talk about what an isha zona is in greater length, but the word zona has two meanings. It's more commonly known form is a prostitute or a harlot. Its less commonly known application is
innkeeper.
Correct. From what root?
Mazon.
Correct. Mm. Correct. Now, that's not an accident, because the two professions historically were interconnected. The Beit Mazon was more often than not a Beit Zona. Why? Because it was, most hotels in those days were brothels. That's what a hotel was. Right? Didn't have Hiltons and Sheratons and, right? If you went to the local inn, they provided all kinds of entertainment at the local inn. So a Beit Zona is literally a Beit Zona and a Beit Mazon, and that's where it's most likely that you will find yourself lodging. And that's exactly what they did. In other words, they don't go to her because she's the local prostitute. They go to her because she's the local inn. But it's also a great source for information. It's a great source for spies, because it's like going to the bar, right? Everybody walks through. It's the central hub of the city. That if you want to find information, that's the place to go. And they went, and they slept there. They slept there because they arrived at night. How do we know they arrived at night? From the next verse, Vayeamar leMelech Yericho leMor. Vayeamar is a very interesting verb form. Vayeamar means it was told to. Never tells us who spilled the beans on them. Never tells us who revealed the secret. I have a theory, but I'll share it with you at the end of the unit. Vayeamar leMelech Yericho leMor. Hine anashim bau hena halayla mibnei Yisrael. Behold, people from Bnei Yisrael have come here tonight. So they've arrived at night, which makes sense given the fact that this was a secret. Right? It was a spy mission. It was a secret. Cheresh lemor. So the fact that they arrived at night makes a great deal of sense. How the king of Yericho found out about this secret spy mission that night is a mystery. I'm not going to tell you the answer to that mystery quite yet. Who is there? No. I have a... Oh, maybe. You never know. Lachpor at the Aretz, and they have come for the purpose of spying out the land. The rest of the story will hold. Two verses are enough for now. The rest of the story we'll come back to. I really want to address for now the timetable. What's going on? And then we'll go through the whole story of Yehoshua's spies in a comparison to Moshe's spies and what actually transpired. So what's the time frame? When are we? Where are we? When is all this happening? What... You know what? We're going to have to finish the pack first. I thought I could shortcut it, but it won't work. There's too much information we don't have. All right, we're going to finish the pack first. Vayishlach melech Yericho el vachav lemor. The king of Yericho, whose name is never mentioned, sends a message to Rechav, saying, Hotzi ha'anashim haba'im elayech asher ba'u levetech. Give us the people who have come to your house. Ki lachbor et kol ha'aretz ba'u. Because if you don't know by now, they have come to spy out the land. Batikach ha'isha et shnei ha'anashim v'titzbeno. Rachav took the two people and she hid them. Who's the last person hidden by the expression lahatzpin?
Moshe.
Correct. Very good. Vatomer ken ba'o elai ha'anashim. She said, indeed, the two people have come. V'lo yadati ma'ayin hema. But I had no clue where they're from. Which may or may not be correct. We will never know. Vahi hashar lizgor b'choshech. The gate was closing at night. Why would the gate close at night? For protection. The wall of a city is where is the protection of the city. So you close the gate at night. Where is Rachav's house? In the wall. Which essentially means, you ever been to Shai Yafo? Been to Shai Yafo? Right? Shai Yafo is a big sha'ar. In ancient times, when you built a city, the sha'ar of the city was a marketplace. In that sha'ar was everything. In the sha'ar, when it talks about the sha'ar of a city, it means not just a physical gate, but it's the central, it's Main Street. Right? It's the market, it's the courts, everything sits in the sha'ar ha'ir. Shoftim b'shotim titen lecha b'chol sha'arecha. You'll set up judges and courts in your gates. What do you mean, in your gates? Because that's where the sha'ar ha'ir was. In the end of Eshet, in the end of Megillat Rut, v'yeda kol sha'ar, kol yoshvei sha'ar iro. Where is it? Well, we say it in Eshet Chayil. We say it in Eshet Chayil. The end of Eshet Chayil. Well, first of all, what you have when Boaz and Ploni Amoni meet to discuss the future of the land, the transaction. But Uvoz Allah Hashar, Vayeshiv Sham, Vineh Goel Over. Right, Boaz goes up to the Sha'ar. The Sha'ar is a meeting place. The Sha'ar is where everything took place. But there's an expression, Vayedakosh, Ki Yodea Koshar Ami, Ki Eshet Chayil At. Boaz says to Ruth, Ki Yodea Koshar Ami, Ki Eshet Chayil At. All those who sit in the gate know that you are an Eshet Chayil. What do you mean there's a sit in the gate? What kind of a concept is that? Sit in the gate? But the Sha'ar was the place. It was the center of the town. It was the center of town. It was downtown. And it was the
Wasn't it sometimes where the king's throne was?
The throne was not necessarily in the Sha'ar. The throne was in the palace, but you certainly had... you had Mordechai, for example. By Mordechai, it says, Mordechai yoshev b'sha'ar ha-melech. What does it mean to sit b'sha'ar ha-melech? To sit b'sha'ar ha-melech means to be a judge, to sit in the court, because the court's set in the market. And the court's set in the market because that's where the people were and that's where the market was. And the market needed to be near the courts because... Because how did the system work, right? If somebody tried to cheat you in the market, you ran to the court, and that's the relationship between them. So you had the market, and opposite the market, you have the court, which is essentially what you have today. And most cities are built with the commercial sector, and the court system are essentially usually in the same place. I don't know. St. Louis has a funny structure to it, but. Right. Okay. There you go. When you don't have a walled city, you put it into the center of the city. When you had a walled city, the entrance into the city with the Sha'ar was where everything took place, including the market, because that was the most accessible place. And certainly that's what I think was going on here. That's why the Beit Zonah was always near the Sha'ar or in the wall around the Sha'ar. Made sense. That's what people are coming through. That's the local thoroughfare. And she says, as the gate was closing, the people ran. I didn't know where they were going. If you run quickly, you're likely to catch them. In the meantime, carefully, without looking at the translation, translate that phrase carefully. Vehi he'elatam hagaga. Almost. Nope. This is a very important issue in biblical grammar. We will come up with this issue will come up many times. That's good. That's even better. This shtender is going to be the end of it. What?
Before you said, I said, this shtender is going to drive me.
No, the drink I didn't say. Drive me.
And there you go.
I hate chocolate. Past biblical biblical grammar. Simple lesson in biblical grammar. Past tense. How does Tanakh present past tense? Right? Past tense is always presented. Let's take this sentence as an example. Vayishlach Yehoshua ben Nun. Okay? Vayishlach Yehoshua. Actually, it's not such a good example. Let's give a better example. Oh, no, that's okay. That's fine. Vayishlach Yehoshua. Past tense in Hebrew. Biblical Hebrew. Takes the form of? Right. Yishlach. It's almost correct. There are three identifications to the biblical form of past tense. It's the future verb combined with the vav ha'ipuch, reversing vav. The reversing vav looks like what? How do you tell the difference between a reversing vav and a regular vav? So now, there are many exceptions, but the basic rule is that the vav ha'ipuch is a vav ptucha, And the dagesh in the following letter. That's the vav ha'ipuch. If it's missing the dagesh, or it's a vav with a shva, usually it's not a vav ha'ipuch. There are exceptions, because some letters can't take a dagesh, and some letters can't take a patach. There are certain exceptions. But for the most part, that's the rule. It's vav p'tucha vayomer, vayedaber, vayishlach. Not vayishlach, vayedaber. It's vayishlach, vayedaber, vayomer, vayelchu, vayeamer, vatitzpino, vayehi. Okay, there are exceptions. V'haya is an exception. Because of the combination. But that's the basic. That's one and two. One is that it's a vav p'tucha. Two is that it has a dagesh. Three, verb is followed by verb subject. Okay? The subject of the verb. The subject of the verb. Vayishlach Yoshua, Yoshua sent. Okay. Subject of the verb. Not the object. That's exactly why biblical grammar is hard to translate literally, because it's constantly reversing from the order of the verbs and the subjects as we usually say them in English. Right? You wouldn't say, sent Yehoshua. You might in some sort of poetry, but Yehoshua sent. But in Hebrew, it's Vayishlach Yehoshua, which, by the way, is often mistranslated as, right? It's often translated as, and he sent Yehoshua. It drives me nuts. The kids do it, and I have 12th graders, and they do it all the time. Mm-hmm. Vayishlach Yehoshua, they translate, and Yehoshua sent. The Vav HaYipuch can't be translated, because it's not there as a conjunctive. It's not a connective. It's not a translation. It's not and. It's the biblical grammatical tense of the verb. It's what makes it past tense. You can't translate it as and. And otherwise, that's why if you look at translations, and every verb is and. Who writes literature like that? So drop the ands. It's just a way of sequentially identifying what's happening. Vayishlach Yehoshua. Yehoshua sent. Those are the three signs of a reversing vav. Vav p'tucha, dagesh, and the subject of the verb follows the verb. That's past tense. Now look at this phrase. Where are we? V'hi he'elata, v'hi he'elatam, Hagaga. What do I have? None of those. First of all, the subject of the verb comes first. And there's no vav ha'ipuch. In fact, he'elatam is past. He'elatam. Past. So what did I do here? I thought we had a rule for biblical past tense. And it's not the only example. So what's the answer? There are two types of past tense. In English, we call them past and past perfect. What's past perfect? What, you thought you were learning Tanakh? You're learning English grammar.
I'm an English teacher.
If you were to put that into past perfect tense, how would it sound? Not she took them onto the roof, but
had
taken them. Correct. And again, there are always exceptions. But generally speaking, when Tanakh uses the simple past tense verb form, subject first, simple past tense form of the verb. It usually is because it's an indication of past perfect. V'hiha alatam hagagah doesn't mean she took them up to the roof when she sent the soldiers of the king away. It means when we said three sentences earlier, v'titzbeno, she had taken them up to the roof. Right? She had brought them up earlier. I'll give you a couple of classic examples. It's a very, very important grammatical rule to know about, and I'll show you.
It changes everything.
Well, it changes the meaning of the sentence. By all means, don't. You may do anything you like, by all means.
Excuse me.
You're welcome to join the class, too.
I'd love to join this class. I'd get a volunteer to go teach my geometry class. Thank you so much.
It's okay. I'll give you a couple of examples. One in particular is very famous because it's the centerpiece of the Jewish Christian of a fundamental Christian Jewish polemic. I'll show you what I mean in a moment. But let me give you an example from Shmuel. Shmuel. Shmuel Aleph. I have to make sure I get the right prakim. I never remember prakim. Shaul dies. Shmuel dies in Perek. Yes, thank you. Beginning of Perek Chaf Hei. Shmuel Aleph Perek Chaf Hei, chapter 25. Chapter 25. Shmuel Aleph. Vayamot Shmuel. Don't ask me why it's not Vayamat. Why is it a Kamat Katan? That's a different biblical, that's a different grammatical rule. Anyway, but Vayamot, I won't confuse you for now. Vayamot Shmuel, translate. Shmuel died. Right. See, now you're going to break a habit. Now you've got to break the habit of the end. Vayamot Shmuel, Shmuel died. Notice the form. Vav, Ptucha. Dagesh in the yud, subject of the verb, follows the verb. Vayamot Shmuel. Okay, everybody with me? Now, take a look at the begin. Excuse me? Shmuel Aleph, Perek Chaf Hei. 25. Chapter 25. Now, three chapters later, chapter 28. The war with the Philistines begins. Shaul has a problem. His problem is that he needs advice what to do. And his normal source of advice is. Actually, let me just finish that verse. V'yamot Shmuel v'yikavtzu ko Yisrael v'yispidu lo. Shmuel died, and all of Israel gathered together, and they eulogized. Gather together. in English, you would say, and they eulogize him because it's a vayikberuhu b'veito. Not only did they eulogize him, but they buried him. So he's very dead. Agreed? Mm-hmm. Page 28. Chapter 28, verse 3. Ushmuel met vayispidu lo ko Yisrael vayikberuhu berama. Now, if I don't understand the biblical grammatical rule that I just explained to you, I would translate that verb, that verse as Shmuel died, and he was eulogized and buried in Ramah. Problem. He's already dead.
Agreed?
Yeah.
Oh. You understand the grammatical rule, Shmuel met, u'shmuel met means that's not a vav ha'ipuch. Notice the grammatical form. Subject is first. Simple past tense. Shmuel met means Shmuel had died. Why am I repeating that information? Before this chapter, the chapter is telling me Shmuel had died and he was buried. Now Shaul is a problem. Namely, he needs to consult with somebody and his prophet is gone. Not only is his prophet gone, look at the rest of the verse. The Shaul hesir ha'avot v'hayidonim min ha'aretz. Translate. Shmuel had removed from the land, in part of his earlier campaign, all of the soothsayers. So now, not only is Shaul, is Shmuel, his Navi, gone, but he can't communicate with Shmuel because all the soothsayers who usually can communicate with the dead are also gone. So he's got a problem. He's got, what am I going to do? So that chapter, that's the introduction, the opening of the famous story of Shmuel. It goes to Eshet Ov, to the wife of the soothsayer, to try to figure out if he can conjure up Shmuel's soul or image. Right? But the context of Shmuel Med gives you the structure of this grammatical form. Why is this important? I'll tell you the most important application of this rule. It has nothing to do with our chapter, but just be aware of it. It's really very important. At the beginning of Sefer Breshit, sequence of chapters in the opening of Sefer Breshit. Did we discuss this once before?
No.
Doesn't sound familiar. There's no lip on the bottom of the shtender. Thank you. Thank you. It didn't ever had one. I need a shtender. Anyway. I switched to Tanakh already. My other Tanakh died. I switched to Tanakh already. Perek Bet. Right. Perek Aleph and Bet is the story of creation. Adam and Chava. Perek Gimel. It's the story of Gan Eden. Correct? Breshit. Perek Gimel is the story of Gan Eden. The end of Perek Gimel. Adam and Chava are expelled from Gan Eden. Agreed? Okay. Which brings us to the opening of Perek Dalet. Perek Dalet, Pasuk Aleph. Adam Yada et Chava Ishto Bataha etc. Bataha Vatelet et Kai. Translate. How do they translate? How do they translate? Give me the translation right out of the, how do they translate? Right out of the text.
And the man knew Chava.
Correct. Wait. You understand the problem? You understand the problem? Because Art School translated according to Rashi. Because Art School consistently, and I'll tell you right in the introduction, whenever there's an ambiguity in the text, they will always translate according to Perish Rashi. Whereas the other translations don't necessarily have that consistent. Well, I'll tell you what Perish Rashi is. It is a grammatical rule. The grammatical rule is told to us by Rashi on the Pasuk. Rashi adds three words to the word Yada. This is the first place that grammatical rule appears in Chumash. And Rashi adds three words. On the word Yada. Kvar kodem lachen. Meaning, the man had known his wife, conception took place earlier, the birth is now.
Who cares? We should. Why? Because this verse is the source of a fundamental Christian doctrine. No. A different one. Right? Concept of original sin. Meaning, according to Christian doctrine, the first conjugal act between man and woman takes place only after the expulsion from the Garden of Eden. And hence, the notion that it was part of the punishment of man and woman. Because the verse says, and Adam knew Chava after the expulsion from the garden. Correct? Chapter 4. Says Rashi, it's a mistranslation. The translation should be, V'Adam Yada. Conception took place before the expulsion. All we're talking about now, V'Tahar V'Telet, is we're talking about the birth of Cain. The birth of Cain, Perek Dalet is Cain and Hevel, takes place after the expulsion from Gan Eden, not before. Conception was in the Garden of Eden. This is the answer to the polemic and to the concept of original sin. It's a fundamentally important Rashi.
This
girl
translation says, now the man
had known. Now is simply a way of connecting the sentences. Now.
That's not
right? Now.
Right.
And the next story is, the man had known, and he had conceived, she had conceived, and, right, the now is irrelevant. But the key here is the form. If it had meant to say, and look at the rest of Perek Aleph and Bet, you'll see it. Every grammatical form of the verb is past tense, is future tense of the vav ha'yipuch. If it had meant to say that this happened now, it should have said, Vayeda Adam et Chava Ishto. Ve'ha'adam yada is the biblical form of past perfect tense. And you'll find many examples of, and then it always follows by the regular vav ha'yipuch, because once you've jumped back in time, you now move forward sequentially. So you always, the first verb is always in past perfect, and then in regular past tense from there forward. Everybody with me? All right, so that's a... back to Yehoshua. Of course, none of this is relevant to understanding the Perek in Yehoshua except for that phrase, but I just... it's so important, the concept, that you need to be aware of it. All right. Where are we up to? V'hi he'elatam hagaga. She had taken them up to the roof. V'atitmenem b'fishte ha'etz ha'aruchot la lagag. She hid them in the flax that was organized on her rooftop. V'ha'anashim radfu achareihem. Another example. She's going up to the roof. The people had gone out to chase, right? The king's people had gone out to chase after Derech HaYarden Al Ma'abrot, by way of the Yarden. They went. Why did they go Derech HaYarden? Why did the king's forces run chasing them towards the Yarden? Because the assumption is, if they came to Yericho as spies, their assumption is that they've gone, that the spies have run, and in which direction have they run? Back to camp, which would be in Shittim, here. So they're going in Mabrot HaYarden. V'hasha'ar sagaru, the gate had been closed. Acharei kashe yotzu harotvim achareihem. They closed the gate after the people ran off. So now, that poses for Rachav a problem. Namely, they're stuck on her roof. They can't get out. They can't get out. V'hema terem yishkavun v'hi alta alehem alagag. They hadn't gone to sleep yet, and she had gone up to see them on the rooftop. All of that is background information to this conversation that takes place now. V'tomer el ha'anashim. She says to the people, Yada'ati ki natan Hashem lechem et ha'aretz. I know that God has given you this land. V'chinafla immatchem aleinu, your dread has fallen upon us. Same grammatical form again. V'chinamogu kol yoshvei ha'aretz mipnechem. And all of the inhabitants of the land have melted away before you. Ki shamanu et asher hovish Hashem et meyam suf mipnechem, because we have heard of how God has dried up the Yam Suf before you, b'tzidchem Mitzrayim, when you left Egypt. V'asher asitem lishnei machay ha'amuriyah she'be'ever ha'yarden l'sichor g'lo'oga she'hechamtem otam. And we've heard what you have done to the two kings, Sichon and Og, that you have destroyed. Banishma, we heard all this, Bayimas Lavavenu, and our hearts became melted. V'lokama odruach b'ish mipnechem. There is no spirit, no courage, no willingness to fight against any of you. Ki Hashem Elokechem hu Elokim b'shamayim imavi ala aratz mitachat. Because Hashem, God, is God in the heavens and on the earth below. A wonderful shir, wonderful shir in Amuna. A wonderful, inspiring speech. V'atai shavuna li b'Hashem. Ki asiti imachem chasad. Swear to me by your God, for I have now done kindness to you. Va'asitem gamatem im beit avi chesed. So you must also do kindness to my household. Unetetem li ot emet. And give me a good sign, a true sign. Chapter 2, verse 13. I want you to keep to V'achiyitem. To spare us. Spare. Right? Keep us alive. Spare et aviv et imi et achai et achotai. Et achiyotai. Me, my father, my mother, my brothers, my sisters. Et kol asher lehem and everything that belongs to them. V'hitzaltem et nafshoteinu mimavet. Spare us from death. Clearly she understood that what was about to take place was battle against Yericho. Everybody was going to be destroyed. For all she has done for them, she wants her life spared and the life of her family. You can ask anything you like.
The seven Neviot, was Rachab one of them? Is her name on it? I think that her name was on it. No? Am I getting confused?
Sarah, Rachel, Leah, Miriam, Hulda, Abigail. No, she's not. She's not even Jewish.
Right, so she's not considered one of them. No. One of Yah.
According to Midrash Chazal, she marries Yahushua, but I don't think she fits the category. Vayamru laha anashim.
What's the response?
Nafshenu tachtechem lamut im lo tagidu et dvareinu ze.
What does that mean?
Nafshenu tachtechem lamut im lo tagidu et dvareinu ze.
What does that mean? We will, how do they translate it? Our souls will die if our souls will die instead of yours if you do not relate this discussion of ours. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, this translation says our life for yours if only you do not.
If only, thank you. Right? There's a condition. In other words, the second half of this phrase is a conditional statement. So it's we will protect you with our lives. But there's a condition that comes with that.
Only
namely,
if you don't.
Only if you don't reveal. V'haya betet Hashem lanu et ha'aretz v'asinu imach chesed ve'emet. When God will give us this land, we will do with you chesed ve'emet, kindness and truth. V'atoridem b'chever ba'ad ha'chalon, she let them down with a rope by the window. Ki ve'ta b'kir ha'choma u'v'choma hi yoshavet. Her house was in the wall. In other words, what did she do? The gates closed. How do you get them out of the city? Well, her house, one half of the one wall of this house is the outside wall of the city, and the other wall of this house is the inside wall of the city. In other words, the city is built out of a double wall.
Windows on the outside. Right. She let them out into the
house? Well, a window. She let them out from the roof. They're on the roof, right? Not through a window, but a chalon is a break. In other words, if you look at the top of a wall, right? It's a not technical word we would call a window. It's a break in the top of the wall, whatever they call it. But the chiddush is that her house is the wall. The outer wall of her house is the wall of the city. So they close the gate. She has the option of letting him out the outside the gates without having to go through the gates. It's mind-blowing to me that the king couldn't figure that one out. Right? But anyway, I guess there's more divine providence here than meets the eye. Batomer lehem haharalechu. She says to them, go to the mountains. Why to the mountains? Which direction are the mountains? Which direction are the mountains? West. Why is she sending them to the west? Because the soldiers of the king went eastward looking for them. So to hide, they have to go into the they have to go to the opposite direction. Pen yivgu'u bachem hadotfim, lest the king's forces who are chasing after you meet you on the way. V'nachbetem shama shloshet yamim, hide there for 3 days. Ad shov harodfim v'achar talchu l'darkechem. 3 days hide in the mountains until the king's forces come back, and then you can go on your way. V'yemlu elea ha'anashim. Here's the condition. The people said to her, Nikiyim anachnu mishvuatech hazeh asher yishba'atanu. Unless the following conditions are met, we will be absolved of any responsibility for this oath. Hine anachnu ba'im ha'aretz. We're coming into this land. Et tikvat chut hashani hazeh. This scarlet thread or rope that you used, why it's scarlet, I have no idea, but that you used to let us down the wall. Tikshiri b'chalon asher horadteinu bo. Tie it to this window that you let us out with. Et avich v'timech v'tachayech v'tkol bet avich te'asvi alayech habayta. Whoever you want spared, bring them into the house. We will make sure that this house is a safe house. Anybody who you want spared, make sure they're inside. Clear?
Is there a connection to the red string?
Maybe. I don't know. V'ya kol ashi yetzei midaltei v'teich achutza, damo b'rosho. V'anachnu nikiyim. Anybody caught outside this house is fair game. And we will be absolved of any responsibility. You know what there might be a connection to? What does it sound like? Anybody inside is spared. Anybody outside is not spared. What does it sound like? Makat Bechorot. Makat Bechorot. And there the sign for the house was the blood on the doorposts. Here it's the red thread on the window. Is there a parallel? There's some parallel. Whether the scarlet thread has a significance in that parallel, I don't know. But that's something to be aware of. V'chol asher yeh itach b'bayit damo b'roshenu im yad tiyeh bo. Anybody in this house will be on our heads if anything happens to them. However, im tagidi et tvareinu zeh, if you so much as speak a word of this, v'ayinu nikiyim mishvuatech asher yishba'atanu, we will be absolved of any responsibility. Vatomer kidivrechem ken hu, she said, as you speak, indeed. Vatishalachem vayelechu, she sent them on their way and they went. Notice all the past tense with the vav ayipuch, future tense with the reversing vav. Now become aware of the grammatical form and notice all the dageshes and all the letters. Vatikshor et tikvat hashani b'chalon. And she tied the rope to the window.
Mm-hmm. Looking at Batik Shore, unless my eyes are, why is there not a digation coup?
It should be in the top. It's the second letter. Batik Shore. Vayelchu vayavo hahara. They went and they came to the mountains. Vayeshvu sham shloshit yamim ad shavum harodfim. They stayed there for 3 days until the chasers came back. The king's forces, they went hither and thither. They couldn't find them anywhere. After 3 days, the people came back. They went, came down from the mountain. They go and they meet Yeshua ben Nun. And they tell them everything that transpired. They said to Yeshua, God has given this land into our hands. The people of the land, their hearts have melted away before us. That's the message of the spies. That's the conclusion they came to. That's the report they bring back. And the obvious comparison we will have to make is comparison to the mission and the report of the other spy mission, Moshe's spies. Right, that's our work cut out for us. One more sentence to understand the sequence of events. Vayashkem Yehoshua baboker vayis'u me'ashitim. Yehoshua got up in the morning and he went from Shittim vayavo ad hayarden. He takes his forces, all of Israel, up to the edge of the Jordan. Hu v'chobanei Yisrael v'yalinu sham terem yavoru, and they dwell, they sleep there the night before they cross over the Yarden. So let's, that's everybody. The whole of Israel. So let's understand the sequence of events briefly. Sequence of events is important because the chronology will tell us a number of very important insights into what actually took place. But there's more here than meets the eye, but to unravel that, we need to understand the chronology. Let's assume for the moment we don't know the starting date of Sefer Yehoshua. I'm going to take that as a given. Right, we actually do, but I'll do that in a moment. Let's assume that we're just going to call it day N, whatever the date is. In chapter 1, Yehoshua instructs the people to prepare food. For what purpose? Because they're going to travel to where? Verse 11. Chapter 1, verse 11. Go amongst the people, go and come instruct them, saying, prepare food for yourselves. Another 3 days, you are going to cross the Jordan to go and inherit the land. In 3 days, they're going to cross the Jordan. So based on chapter 1, verse 11, I'm assuming that they're going to cross the Jordan on they're going to cross the Jordan, otherwise known as Chatzayat Yarden, on day N plus 3. Let's assume. Then what happens? Chapter 2. Vayishlach Yehoshua benun menashitim shnayim anashim miraglim. Yehoshua then sends two spies from Shittim. Shittim is where the camp is where Israel is encamped. And they send spies. How long are these spies in Yericho? 3 days. Correct? Because they're in the mountains for 3 days. They come back at the end of chapter 2 and they report on what they had found. Verse 3. Chapter 3 begins, Vayashkem Yehoshua baboker vayis'u mehashitim vayavo ad hayarden. Chapter 3 begins, and the next day they traveled from Shittim to the Yarden. So what day are we? Right? We are a day. Well, if assuming 3 days, in another 3 days they're going to cross the Jordan, then they're still in Shittim for those 3 days while they wait for the Meraglim. They need 3 days' journey. They need provisions for 3 days' journey to the Arden. So from Shittim to the Arden is a 3-day journey. They send the Meraglim, they hide in the mountains for 3 days. They travel from Shittim to the Arden. I'm assuming it takes them how long to get there? 3 days. So now I should be at day N plus 6. Clear? Everybody with me? So theoretically, if Yeshua starts on day N, the crossing of the Jordan should take place on day N plus 6. 3 days for the Meraglim and Yericho, 3 days to reach the borders of the Jordan River. They have to wait, assumingly, they have to wait for the report from the spies before they can break camp and move. Correct? Here's where life becomes interesting. You have the source page? This is the same source page I gave out once before, but these are extra copies of it if anybody needs. Actually, there's an extra. Anybody? Do we know when they crossed the Jordan? Well, you know what? Let me not do this backwards. Let's start from the Gemara in Kiddushin. Tanya Idach. We have the following Braita. The Gemara in Kiddushin, Daf Lamed Chet, source page, the top source, first source at the top of the page. B'shiv'a b'Adar met Moshe. We know that Moshe died on the 7th of Adar. How do I know that Moshe died on the 7th of Adar? We just had, right? I just spoke about that in Shabbos. How do we know that Moshe died on the 7th of Adar? And of course, that year wasn't a leap year. And Moshe was born on the 7th of Adar. That's a separate issue. In other words, Moshe was born and died on the same day. That's a separate issue philosophically. How do I know that Moshe died on the 7th of Adar? What's the source? So how do I know what today was? So the Gemara quotes a whole series of psukim. And the Gemara gives very little interpretation of these psukim. It just quotes them one after the other, figure it out. And the calculation is very simple. Number one, Shine'emar. Vayamot sham Moshe eved Hashem. Moshe dies at the end of Devarim chapter 34. Uchtiv, it says immediately, Vayivku b'nei Yisrael et Moshe ba'arvot Moab 30 yom. They cried for Moshe for 30 days. So whenever he died, 30 days of mourning for Moshe. That's the standard period of mourning. People often make the mistake of thinking that the standard period of mourning is 12 months. It's not true. The standard period of mourning is 30 days across the board. There is no precedent anywhere in Tanakh for any mourning period more than 30 days. Chazal extended the mourning period for a parent and only for a parent as part of the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em. To express the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em, the obligation required something special, and therefore they extended the mourning period for a year. I often get asked that question because in the context of a shiva for a spouse, a sibling, rachmana litzlan, a child, shivas, the mourning period is only 30 days. And I often ask the question, right, it's not fair. Right? For a parent, it's 12 months, but for a child, rachmana litzlan, is for 30 days. But it's backwards. All mourning in halacha is 30 days. There's a unique status of a parent because of the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em and only for a parent. And if you applied it to anybody else, you would lose the whole notion that it's unique to a parent because of the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em. Chazal, all of Dinei Avelus are established by Chazal. They're all Drabbanon. Chazal established the criteria accordingly, 30 days for everybody else, 12 months for a parent. Chazal didn't want us adding to the established criteria because they didn't want it open-ended. They didn't want people essentially That's a much longer discussion. We'll leave it for now. So Moshe dies on a particular date. We don't know yet what that date is. 30 days they mourn for him. Uchtiv, and then it says the beginning of Sefer Yoshua. Vahi acharei mot Moshe eved Hashem. Yoshua begins with the instruction by God to Yoshua immediately following the death of Moshe, assumingly following the 30-day mourning period, because it would not make sense for God to instruct Yoshua to move the people before they've had the chance for those 30 days of mourning. Uchtev, Moshe avdimet, atak kum avorat hayaden. God says to Yoshua, now get up and move the people across the Jordan. It's time to go. That's the end of the 30 days. Uchtiv, and it says, Ivru bekerav ha-machaneh v'tzivu otam lemor achinu lechem tzedaki ba'od shloshit yamim. Go and tavu ot hayaden. It's go and tell the people that in another 3 days you are crossing the Jordan. Uchtiv, and it says, and this is the key verse in chapter 4 of Yoshua, the verse that I was going to show you before, and I'll show you now. V'ha'am alu min ha-yarden be'asor la-chodesh harishon. We have a very specific date for the crossing of the Jordan. The Jordan crossing of the Jordan took place on the 10th of Nisan. Tzei mehem, 33 yamim l'mafreya. Go calculate backwards from the 10th of Nisan, 33 days. Why 33 days? 30 days for the morning and 3 days for the journey from Shittim to the Yarden. From here you see that Moshe died on the 7th of Adar. Right. 30 days would take you to the 7th of Nisan, 3 days later to the 10th of Nisan. Ruthie, ask your question. Correct. What happened to the 3 days of the Meraglim? You understand the problem of the timetable? There's 3 days missing in the calculation. So what's the answer? Simple answer. Nope. Simpler. Simpler. An optical illusion, but it's very correct. They didn't wait for them. They sent the spies. That's why I hate chalk. That's why I hate chalk. Told you. They sent the spies.
They didn't wait for the answer and then they were.
Correct. They didn't wait for the answer, they're on their way.
Like a waste of time.
Oh. That's my one of my questions. One of my many questions on the story of the spies is, what was the purpose? Mm-hmm. They certainly didn't send the spies to figure out if they were entering into Jericho. Okay, that was already decided. They sent the spies perhaps to figure out how to enter Jericho. How? In other words, you send spies to a city for one of two reasons. Either to determine whether that's the appropriate path, or you know that that's your next city on the attack path, you need to figure out a strategy. So you send your spies to assess the strategy. But in the meantime, Yeshua breaks camp, and he starts. The reconnaissance, the reconnaissance mission. Mm-hmm. Right. So the Reuven and God are the Marines, and the spies are your reconnaissance mission. Your intelligence gathering. So they send them out from Shittim, and notice what happens. They send them from Shittim. The camp travels 3 days. When the spies come back, where are they coming back to? They're not coming back to Shittim. Right? They come back to the edge of the Jordan. They come back to meet the Bnei Yisrael on the edge of the Jordan. In other words, here's the picture of it. The picture is, they send these two spies, and the camp of Israel starts to march. Now change scenes for a minute and put yourselves into Jericho. And Rahab says to them, the people of Canaan are frightened out of their boots. The king of Canaan comes running on the door and says, where are those Israelites? Ostensibly because, right, they're watching the camp of Israel on their doorstep. They're on the march. And they're marching slowly towards the Jordan. So even though it sounds to us, it looks like it's happening simultaneously. Sorry, it looks like it's happening sequentially. In fact, it's happening in parallel. Not only that, there's even a source in the Yerushalmi that says that the conquest of Jericho, which will take place 7 days after they come into the land of Israel, took place on Shabbos, the 21st of Nisan, actually, to be precise, takes place on Shabbos. If you work your way backwards, if the 21st of Nisan, which is the seventh day of Pesach, which ostensibly is the day they conquered Jericho, was a Shabbos, what was the date that Yeshua's spies were sent? They crossed the Jordan on the 10th. They were sent 3 days earlier. So what day were they sent? The 7th. 7th of Nisan is the same day of the week as the 21st of Nisan. Agreed? Right? Which means it's Shabbos. So did they send the spies on Shabbos? Possibly. Or, more likely, they sent them Matzah Shabbos. Which makes sense because they come to Yericho in the middle of the night. Right? They arrive at night. So all under the cover of darkness. They send them at night. Spies go out to spy out the city of Yericho to figure out how to conquer Yericho. And the army of Israel begins to march slowly. 3 days march towards the Jordan. During the 3 days that Yehoshua is leading his people towards the Jordan, waiting for the reconnaissance report of his spies to assess the strategic approach to the conquest of the city of Yericho, what are his spies doing during those 3 days? They're hiding in the mountains. So I have a simple question. They arrive in Yericho at night. They are immediately discovered. The king comes pounding on the door. Rahav that night sends them out the window. Ostensibly, they were sent into Yericho for 3 days. Yeshua says to them, meet us in 3 days at the banks of the river. Ostensibly, they were sent for 3 days because they need 3 days' worth of information to gather. Logical. They spend those 3 days hiding in the mountains. What strategic, practical information do the spies of Yeshua bring back to Yeshua? That they've been hiding in the mountains for 3 days, which means essentially the answer to my question is nothing. Maybe. That's my first question. But we know the report. The report says the people of Canaan are all afraid of us. Was that the report that they were sent to bring back? Assumingly, they were sent to bring back a report of a plan, of a strategy, of how to conquer the city. They bring back a report about the Canaanites are afraid of us. I'm not going to help you, sure. That's question number one. Question number two. What is the battle plan? We know the story. We've all learned Yehoshua from the time we were. What is the battle plan? How is Yericho going to be conquered? Right? They're going to walk around the city 7 times, right? Without the philosophy to it, just the practicality to it. They're going to walk around the city 7 times and blow some trumpets. And then the walls are going to come tumbling down. Fine. So I have a simple question. Well, number one, but that's not even my question. My question is a different one. Rahab asks for her family to be spared. And the spies tell her, if you want your family spared, the best place to put them is inside the house that is between the walls of Yericho that is destined to come tumbling down. You'd think that the safest place in the house in the city of Yericho would not be inside the walls of Yericho? Simple question. What on earth was going through their minds to tell Rachav that the safest place for your people is inside the wall that is destined to come tumbling down? Okay. Next week. Next week. It takes 3 days to get from Shittim to the Yarden, from here to here. Correct. Because this is not a 3 day journey for two people. This is a 20 minute journey for three people. Right? But for 2.5 million people, it's a 3 day journey. Correct. 100%.
After the spies come back, or this before?
Before. That's why the psukim are out of your sequence. That's exactly it. These two pukim are happening in parallel.
So it's not using that?
No, because it's not describing a past perfect event. It's happening, it's describing two events in parallel. Tanakh can't do that. Tanakh has no mechanism to describe two events in parallel. So it tells you one chapter, and then it tells you another chapter. It's exactly the same structure as by Yehuda. When Yosef goes down to Mitzrayim, Vayered Yehuda Me'etachav, those two events are happening simultaneously. But we need to put the parallel back. The text themselves simply describe them as sequential events. It's like shifting scenes in a movie. Give me 1 second. Okay.